I do learn from my families. And I used to think in order to do this, I had to have these big family meetings. And what I found was some of the best conversations that we've had in the car. And what the secrets do is it reminds me to take the bait. So, for example, my daughter the other day, she asked me, you know, can I get a Canadian Goose coat? And, you know, without sort of this recognition in my brain, I would have said, we can't afford it. Or I maybe would have made a comment about entitlement or being spoiled. But I forced myself to have a greater conversation. And I think that's a win, right? Some days I don't do it perfectly. But if I can get 2 out of 3 right, I think I'm doing a good job. But really, the key is to plant the seed along the way.
Welcome to The Road to Why by the Northern Trust Institute, the show where business owners, entrepreneurs, and senior executives discuss their life's work and explore the intersection of business, family, wealth, and legacy. I'm your host, Eric Chapaya, Director of Business Services at Northern Trust. So many of our clients and so many of our guests on this podcast ask us the age-old question. How much is enough? How much of my wealth should I give to my children? When should I give it to them? How do I prepare them for the responsibility of the wealth they will inherit? My guests today have spent the better part of their careers answering these questions. Steve Fratkin is president of wealth management at Northern Trust, and Pam Lucina leads Northern Trust's trust and advisory practice and is president of the Northern Trust Institute. Steve and Pam are here today to talk to us about a new book the Northern Trust Institute recently published titled Secrets of Enterprising Families. The book explores these questions of intergenerational wealth transfer, along with many others, which we'll touch upon in our episode today. First, we'll hear from Steve on why Northern Trust wrote the book and why we are qualified to do so. Then we'll turn the conversation to Pam, where she'll dive into the secrets in the book and share a bit about her own personal money story. I think you'll enjoy today's conversation and will gain plenty of insights that you can use with your own family. So let's start things off with Steve. Secrets of Enterprising Family it's an ambitious endeavor. This is a one-volume distillation of essentially wealth planning insights across the most important moments in an individual's or in a family's life. One question that comes to mind is, why Northern Trust? Why is Northern qualified in a good position to write the book on wealth, if you will?
Well, Eric, it's a great question. We have a unique privilege at Northern Trust. Wealthy families let us into their lives. And they do this because of the trust we forge with them together and because we have the experience and expertise to help them optimize their wealth. We have 135 years of experience working with many of the world's most affluent families. And to put this in perspective, Eric, for the subset of your listeners who might have less familiarity with Northern Trust, it's important to understand that we serve 2/3 or almost 70% of the 20 most affluent Americans. Similarly, approximately 30% of the Forbes 400 wealthiest Americans work with Northern Trust. And of course, so too do many other sophisticated and affluent families across the United States and around the globe. Our relationships with clients are symbiotic. We've brought them great ideas to help them steward their wealth, and we've also learned a lot from the complexities of families over the years. We often share these learnings and our expertise in one-on-one meetings with clients and prospects, but the real goal of the Secrets of Enterprising Families was to codify these learnings into a single volume, something that really has never been done in our industry before. I think it's also important to clarify what we mean by Secrets of Enterprising Families. What we're really talking about here are the behaviors of affluent families that successfully achieve lasting wealth across generations. And we're not only speaking about financial wealth. We're also discussing wealth in the broader sense, ultimately incorporating the overall well-being of all family members. And we believe that one of the keys to doing so, beyond technical wealth planning, is in candor, communication, and aligning on a vision for the purpose of wealth. So in sum, Eric, we've written the book on wealth management, and we're uniquely qualified to do so with deep insight around how individuals and families can best manage their wealth to achieve optimal outcomes.
We talk about how comprehensive this book is in delivering insights to families around this concept of building an enterprising family around wealth transfer. But maybe to bring this to life a little bit, can you perhaps give us an example of how using one of the secrets in the book, let's say, or some of the insights from the book can have an impact on how a family does its planning?
Of course. One of our secrets is around this notion of developing the financial skills to meet each family member where they are. And I think it's an important lesson. Getting rich is complicated, but as most people agree, it's probably a good complication to have. It can, however, bring burdens, particularly for subsequent generations. Society often makes comparisons to the wealth-creating generation and says things like, the kids are not as smart, they don't work as hard, and other aphorisms, if you will. In our experience, that is often untrue. It is often also unfair. Comparing kids or grandchildren to people who, by definition, were extraordinary in the way in which they created wealth is an unfair comparison. Comparing subsequent generations to the wealth creator cohort is a comparison not to the 1%, but frequently to the 1/10 of 1%, which is an extraordinarily high bar. Whether fair or not, we have learned that meeting subsequent generations where they are and helping them to be who they want to be, not simply a shadow of the first generation, is liberating and it's empowering. You have to meet family members where they are.
And meeting family members where they are, I think, also entails helping them to answer some of the most fundamental questions that family members will encounter on their journey of wealth transfer. And we've certainly helped a lot of family members answer those questions. In fact, many of our clients we have worked with for several generations. And so how do the insights and the secrets in the book help these families to answer these questions?
Well, Eric, we joke a bit about how the book makes a nice thump when you drop it on the table, and it is, shall we say, robust. It combines both the technical aspects of wealth planning across life's most pivotal moments, from marriage to birth of a child to the loss of a loved one, with storytelling and case studies to match the advice. From a broad perspective, however, the five secrets, which we cover in the first chapter of the book, largely revolve around the behavioral patterns we have observed enterprising families practice around communication, taking a collaborative approach to managing wealth, and avoiding unproductive, though common attitudes like making money a taboo topic. To be clear, there is no one-size-fits-all solution to the questions that families seek to answer. But one of the key themes is that having worked with so many families across generations, we believe it is essential to be intentional. Aligning on your values, understanding that conflict will take place, fostering lifelong learning, and creating candid communication can all make enterprising families even more successful.
And with Steve's introduction to the book, we now turn to my conversation with Pam Lucina, president of the Northern Trust Institute. But before we dive into the book, as we do with all our guests, let's go back to the beginning to learn a little more about Pam and her own money story.
I grew up in Minnesota. I think when I say Minnesota, my accent comes out. But what I would call, I guess, a middle-class upbringing, which I have to admit, at the time, I had no clue what that meant. My parents, like I think a lot of people in that generation, they just never talked about money. And even though I went to private schools and we had enough, I think looking back, they actually struggled a lot more to pay for those things and had to sacrifice a lot more than I think I was appreciated then and certainly am grateful now. I think they didn't talk about money because they wanted me to focus on working. But I do distinctly remember at about, I think I was around 22, I'd already committed going to an expensive private school. I committed to living in Chicago where my friends lived. And my dad dropped me off at the Amtrak station, and he basically said, I am cutting the strings here. You're on your own, kid. You're paying for the school. And you know what? He's entitled to do that. I'm probably going to cut my kids off around the same age. I don't want career students either. But I think it was the abruptness that really left me completely unprepared. I went on to make a series of pretty poor decisions in my mind. For example, I would have, you know, had I known, I probably would have weighed the trade-offs of going to an expensive private law school. I probably would not have lived in Chicago where my friends lived. I for sure would have gone into a lot less debt. And I see this a lot in my practice. I see those that either receive an inheritance or think they're going to and don't. I see divorcing couples. I see couples that have one pass away. And, you know, really, I think a little bit of preparedness would save a lot of hardship. And it's one of the things that I think I learned kind of the hard way.
Yeah, it's interesting. That experience of learning the hard way at an early age almost sets the stage for our conversation today, which is about the book that the Northern Trust Institute, which you're president of, has recently published. And before we get into the details of the book, I want to talk about the title for a minute. The title is Secrets of Enterprising Families. And what does the word enterprising mean? Why is that something that a family might aspire to be?
Yeah, when we say enterprising, what we really mean is those families that were able to transfer what we call the entrepreneurial spirit or some sort of purpose or drive to want to contribute to society. And it's not just the angle of that, but it's really also the behavioral attributes that you need to get that. So being resourceful, developing resilience is a big one to be able to overcome setbacks, to really not be ruined by failure, but learn from it. You know, some people call it a growth mindset. And a good example of that is, you know, we work with a lot of successful business owners. And when we ask business owners, what's success mean to you? A lot of times they, you know, the dollar amounts are one thing, but they don't necessarily focus on the dollar amounts as much as what it represents. And what it represents to a lot of business owners is a reflection of the journey. So what it took to get there, what are some of the failures? And they speak with great pride. You know, I was able to pull myself up from my bootstraps. I overcame this failure. I took on risk. And so that's what gave them the satisfaction. And then somewhere in that conversation, they panic. I would say the fear sets in. And this is very common. And that fear, that what's underlying that really is, you know, they think about their success and they worry that their success is somehow going to rob the next generation of having that same journey, that same self-satisfaction. You know, and it's because they recognize that they're growing up very differently. You know, maybe they lived with abundance and didn't need to struggle. Or to put it bluntly, maybe they're just afraid that they'll be entitled or, in other words, spoiled. I would say the good news is that we see a lot of families be enterprising generation after generation. And what this book really does is it unlocks what are the secrets. You know, what do they do more consistently, more intentionally to have that enterprising nature?
We've interviewed a number of very successful entrepreneurs and business owners on this podcast so far. And one of the questions we ask them most frequently, which is, you know, how do you cultivate the next generation of wealth inheritors, namely your children, with the values that are important to you, the hard work that you've demonstrated? And so many of them admit that they haven't figured it out. You know, they've figured out how to grow their business. They've figured out how to be philanthropic in their community, let's say. But that is the question that, one, is super important to them, but also really hard for them to answer. And I guess maybe if we can get into the inspiration for the book, but also, you know, a lot of business owners say in order to start a good business, you've got to figure out a problem that needs to be solved and then build a business around it. So in that vein, what are some of the questions that this book helps to answer?
This fear, so to speak, of getting it wrong is pervasive. And if you think about the business owner's instinct of the response to that fear, it's usually to double down on control, right? And it's to really, in essence, to try to protect their family from making any of this decision making. kind of like my parents did. You know, they were struggling to pay for private school and I didn't even know about it. And some of them even do it beyond their lifetime. So they'll set up trusts that are meant to protect the beneficiaries from that decision making. And one of the big questions that they ask as they're doing this is, how much is enough? As if they're searching for some sort of magic number that's going to give them a leg up, but allow them to keep motivated. And what we found, and what is the inspiration for the book, is that we've actually developed a very different answer to this question. You know, our answer to the amount that you give the next generation is the amount that you prepare them for. So if you're going to give them a lot, you actually have to prepare them for a lot. If you're going to give them nothing, you need to do that too. The worst thing you can do is prepare them for a lot and give them nothing, or prepare them for nothing and give them a lot. Either one of those can backfire. And so this book is all about preparation, and not just the answer to the question, but how do you prepare? How do I get started? And it answers other big questions, to your point, that we get all the time. So questions like, at what age should I disclose my estate plan? Or what if I share too much too soon? Big one that we get is, how do we get family members to care about being prepared? You know, they're busy. They're like my parents and want them focused on work and school, and getting them engaged is half the battle. And it's not just for families with kids. There's a whole chapter on when children aren't part of the plan. You know, everyone has a family. Some people may define them differently. It's for spouses to make sure that they're on the same page. Sometimes one person will lean out of a conversation around finances. This is designed to get them to lean back in. It's especially important for women who, you know, I'm not being stereotypical. Women, statistically, they live longer than men. And, you know, if they're not prepared, they can make, you know, some bad financial decisions. And then finally, it's really designed for the next generation. We intentionally left jargon out of the conversation and wanted to give them tools to be able to practice that decision-making, kind of the opposite of what I said earlier, where the decision-making is hidden or done behind closed doors.
One thing I love about the book is that it's really a collaboration of many different experts at Northern Trust talking about what they know best, from estate planning to business succession to philanthropy, for instance. But before we dive into the book's secrets, I think it's worth spending a minute on the book's foreword, which is titled, How Do You Define Wealth? Why is it important for families to define what wealth means to them? And why is that such a critical first step in the overall wealth planning process?
Every person, families or not, they have a money story, meaning that they grew up in different circumstances. It may be generational. It may be how your family taught you about money. And a lot of what we learned growing up does impact why we make decisions today. So, for example, grandma, let's say she grew up in the Great Depression, she had scarcity. She, when she makes decisions, she actually will prioritize things like financial security. Dad may have grown up differently, right? He grew up, you know, during the boom stock market and there was much more abundance. He may make decisions that prioritize experiences or lifestyle. And then you have little Johnny, who grew up maybe in the digital world, and he may make decisions that are more aligned with what's the purpose, how do I get social engagement? And so we all have these different money stories. And without recognizing that, and it's not natural to recognize it, they have potential to clash because we're looking at things from a different perspective. And so the reason we want to start with defining wealth and having some common definitions here is that we recognize that we have these money stories. I think that's step one. Because you get empathy when you really think about how people grow up and how they learn things. But when we define wealth, and if we define it without just financial wealth, but really looking at the bigger picture, we tend to come up with sort of this common value system, a common set that the family can actually agree on. And that becomes a motivator, because some of the stuff does require work. It does require intentionality. It does require some conversations, which you may not be in the mood to have or comfortable to have. And so keeping this North Star with the family, this motive, this value system really grounds you, even if you look at things differently. And so that's why it is so important to start there.
Yeah, I think a lot of families they know they have to do this planning, but they almost get frozen because they don't know where to start. And what I love about the money story is it's not this super complicated tax analysis that's going to require like 15 advisors in a room. It's sometimes a potentially difficult but really important simple conversation that you could have with yourself and then with family members. And I didn't really appreciate until I started working here the impact of world events in the generational impact of money. You know, like my grandparents grew up in the Great Depression and how their relationship with money is so different than my parents or myself because of not just our upbringing at home, but the actual environment, you know, the social environment that we've grown up in, the historical events that we went through as we were growing up. So I think that's just such a fascinating thing to explore, which a lot of families don't really get into, but it's a great starting point. I want to dive into the secrets now. And the book is actually anchored around five secrets of enterprising families. Can you maybe share a couple of those secrets with us? And what I think would maybe be interesting is, have you experienced any blowback or sort of objections from maybe the families that you've worked with to implementing some of the secrets that we showcase in the book?
I think if you go back to where I started, where we talk about this fear, and I'm not saying the fear is warranted, but it's common that people have this fear that money or abundance is going to spoil families. Money doesn't spoil families, by the way. Families spoil families. But in reaction to that fear, the knee-jerk reaction to it is to be silent. It's not to talk about it, right? If you don't talk about it, it's not there. Or I hear from families say things like, I don't want to make it all about money. I want my kids to focus on other things like school or work. And honestly, people don't like to talk about money, right? It's emotional. It's maybe deemed impolite. But recognizing that not talking about money, you really do miss an opportunity to teach really valuable lessons and to really uncover some of these money stories and assumptions that we're undeniably making in our head. And so the first secret, and it may seem like common sense, but it is, you have to make these money conversations not taboo. And that's easier said than done, because the hard part is the how. And what this book points out is there are several ways to do it. It's never too late. There are a lot of entry points, which we get into the book, of how to start this conversation. And then to your point about, you know, what are some blowback or objections I get, you know, a very valid objection that I hear from many, many clients is, you know, I don't want to tell too much, because if I talk too much about money, I will ruin their motivation. And that's valid, right? You don't want to sit down with a 18-year-old and tell them there's this trust fund waiting for you, or here's the family's balance sheet. But I guess two things I would say to that. One, kids aren't stupid. They have assumptions. If you live in a nice house, if you have a nice car, or maybe you're like me where I just assume my parents could afford the private school that they sent me to. So they're finding out this information. And then two, and this is really important, I often say separate financial discussions from financial disclosure, meaning that by normalizing money conversations, you're not necessarily talking about the family balance sheet. You are normalizing the conversation. And sometimes you're going to get questions that you're not prepared to ask. That's okay. They can ask you things like, how much money do we make? You don't want to blow them off. You don't want to lie. What you really do want to do is find out why they're asking that and have a conversation around it. Don't make it dirty or secret. So a lot of what this book does is it gets to the how in the approach, and where do I start and what are those entry points so I can start to normalize these conversations so I can prepare.
I love that it gives a roadmap to facilitating those conversations, which are such an important starting point to all of the other technical planning that might follow. Because if you don't have those conversations up front, the best estate plan in the world is not really going to work for your family. So I think that's really important. Can we spend a minute on how the book is organized? Because from what I understand, there are certain chapters that cover life events. So maybe a marriage or the arrival of children, let's say. But then there are other chapters that are devoted to types of families or types of wealth creators, a business owner, let's say, or a corporate executive. What was the impetus for organizing the book in that way?
This really gets to the how. How do I prepare, right? And preparation is not a one-time event. There is no course you can send people through. You don't want an information download. What we have found when working with families is that if you truly want to engage a family member, you have to recognize that every family is different, every member is different, and you have to meet them where they're at. So to your point earlier, information overload is real. And people are really most likely to lean in to knowledge and be open to absorbing information when they're going through something, a life event. And what this does is it emphasizes practice over theory. So, for example, if you are preparing for a birth of a child or thinking about marriage or, God forbid, going through a divorce or thinking about the death of a loved one, these are times where you're a really big consumer of information and you're more likely to lean in. And so what we really designed this for is a tool for a family to have that discussion so that that topic is on the table. It's done in a very bite-sized manner. There are case studies so that, and again, we leave the jargon up, you know, as much as we can off and define any terms that maybe need to be defined in there so that families, so it's accessible. And families can revisit this tool often to have, you know, these types of conversations when they're meaningful. Practice is a lot more impactful than theory.
Pam mentions that the book is a useful wealth planning tool for families. But what families are we talking about? Are the book secrets only really applicable to billionaires? Are the insights in the book mainly for the older generation who created the wealth? Or are they also relevant for younger generations?
I would actually say this book is for anyone who has the means to provide beyond just basic needs. Because once you have the ability to and have to prioritize wants versus needs, these issues are real and they're for everyone. And everyone encounters them to different extents. So for that wealth creator who is, you know, worried about the impact their success will have on the next generation, we have lessons from what's actually happened in the next generation. So it's books for them. Again, I do think it's a great thing for spouses to get on the same page and to make sure that, you know, they're both equally leaning in to finances. If God forbid something were to happen, divorce or death, and then for the next gen, them to embrace it, to be able to gain the confidence of their family that, you know, they have started and that they can have these open conversations. And I even say, you know, for advisors to use this as a tool to share with their clients. It really is more about it being a tool than it being a one and done.
Yeah, it seems really important, too, that it is a book that's accessible and relevant to, you know, different generations, because I could see if it was something that was only really intended for, like, let's say the wealth creators, the older generation, the next generation might perceive it as being prescriptive, you know, like I read a book and I'm telling you what to do, or vice versa. If it was only intended for the next generation, the earlier generation might think, well, this isn't really something that's relevant to me. So I think that's important so that it can help, like you said, facilitate those conversations is almost like as a family, we're reading pieces of this book and it's helping us to understand each other better and how we want to put together a wealth plan. So I have to ask, we've gone through some of the secrets. You've helped spearhead this book on the secrets of enterprising families. You and your husband have three daughters. Have you implemented any of these secrets or tried them out in your own family?
Yeah. So first of all, to your earlier comment about the book, I have been using the book with my daughters. They have been giving me notes and criticism. So I did want to make sure that it was accessible to them, and I actually got them to read it. But I would say, have I implemented the secrets? I certainly have tried. But I would say some years I may give myself maybe a D minus, some years more of a B plus. I certainly never give myself an A. But here's the thing is you don't have to be perfect. You know, what we have found from families, it's okay to not get this right all the time. You really just need to be intentional. So, for example, I used to think, you know, I've been doing this for longer than I care to admit. And I do learn from my families. And I used to think in order to do this, I had to have these big family meetings. You know, that's what the Rockefellers do. They have these big family meetings. And then as my kids got older, you know, we got busy. I got tired. I got bigger eye rolls with my teenagers. And what I found was some of the best conversations that we've had in the car, you know, on the way to a friend's house. And what the secrets do is it reminds me to take the bait. So, for example, my daughter the other day, she asked me, you know, can I get a Canadian Goose coat? All my friends have them at school. And, you know, without sort of this recognition in my brain, I would have said, we can't afford it. Or I maybe would have made a comment about entitlement or being spoiled. But I forced myself to have a greater conversation. You know, why are you asking? What pressures are you under? What are the trade-offs? If this is really important to you, how do we budget for it? Is this something that aligns with our family values? And I think that's a win, right? Some days I don't do it perfectly, but you know, they say, you know, if I can get 2 out of 3 right, I think I'm doing a good job. But really the key is to plant the seed along the way. And you know, I've been doing this long enough. Every one of my kids is different. They're gonna respond differently based upon their personalities. And the important thing is just being intentional.
Well, I appreciate you being honest and recognizing that none of us are perfect in, you know, implementing these secrets. And I do think a lot of families, to your point, might hesitate to get started with planning because they think it takes this big formal family meeting, you know, or I've got to have like 5 of my advisors in the room and we have a working group list and we're, in order to start things. And nobody is going to have the time to ever do that. So the fact that you can kind of use this book as a way of finding moments to have these conversations and reminding yourself of some of the principles that are going to help with how the family thinks about wealth and thinks about wealth planning, I think is really helpful and frankly practical and doable for families that are busy. I've got to ask you the question that we ask all of our guests, which is, I know you're a very hardworking person. What motivates you to get up in the morning and work hard at what you do? What is your why?
I shared a little bit of my money story. There's more to it. But I think people would be shocked that someone who has spent, you know, several decades in finance was completely unprepared to make financial decisions. And I don't mean to sound ungrateful. I think my parents did a lot of sacrifice. They did a lot of things right. But that preparation, I think, could have avoided some very tough situations. And I'm grateful that I was transferred the grit and the work ethic. But you know, had I been prepared, I think I would have done some things differently. And now I have this window, this privilege to be able to see what all these families do in my career. And I think that's a gift. Not only can I give my clients, but I can give my daughters. I want them to be more confident. I want them to have a purpose. And even if, none of them are, well, the last one is, but the first two are not looking at finance as a career. The last one wants to run the world. But even if they don't do finance as a career, I want them to know enough to be able to hire and fire the right advisors and to ensure that, you know, if they get divorced, they're not left in a limb, you know, that they're prepared for everything. And I love working with families to solve the problem because, Eric, families are messy and they're all different. Every family says, I can't believe how different my kids are. And they all bring a unique set of facts and personalities that do make this an interesting thing to apply these secrets, you know, to adapt to the different personalities and situations and family dynamics. And that's what makes it fun and inspirational to do really every day.
How much is enough is never an easy question to answer. But thankfully, The Secrets of Enterprising Families book, backed by decades of experience, gives families a place to start and a roadmap to have meaningful conversations about wealth and build a plan to grow and transition their wealth and preserve their legacy for the benefit of future generations. A big thank you to Steve and Pam for joining us today. For those interested in getting a copy of the book, contact your local Northern Trust representative. And stay tuned later this year when we'll be launching a new podcast series on the book, featuring interviews with the experts who wrote it. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please remember to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. We'll see you next time.